The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Meditation doesn't have to be a solo practice. Meditation is more fun with friends. Looking for a way to drop in and hang out at the same time? Join us online at Omega Institute for a meditation party with self-proclaimed meditation nerds Dan Harris, host of the 10% Happier podcast, Sebene Selassie, and Jeff Warren. This three-day retreat will stream live from Omega's Hudson Valley campus May 17th to 19th. Don't miss the party. Reserve your spot at eomega.org/party today.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for being with us today. And welcome all of you intentional spirits that are out there in the world. And that's what we believe. It's what we practice. It's what we talk about each and every week here, is that we look at what it takes to be an intentional spirit, more than a person that sets goals or has vision boards and those kind of things. An intentional spirit is a person that keeps walking forward no matter what storms are happening, no matter what issues are going on outside in their lives, but people that continue to step up. So talking about some intentional spirits, have we got the group for you today? We got the one and only Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas. Welcome, Kathleen.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Temple Hayes, for having me on your show.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're here. And did you invite one of your friends to our show today?
I did. I have such a treat for the listeners. We have James Redfield, who is the author of the Celestine Prophecies, with us, and he wrote the foreword to the book that just came out that I'm a co-author on, Crappy to Happy.
Oh, this is so exciting. Welcome, James. Yes, I've never met anyone in my life that didn't know who James Redfield is. And what a changing moment in our consciousness with the movie Celestine Prophecy. And thank you, sir, for creating that space in our lives and our minds and our hearts. So I've always wanted to tell you that. So you live long enough, and here it is.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure. A lot to talk about in the world today.
Yeah, we've got plenty of subject matter anymore, don't we? we certainly do. Love the forward that you wrote for the book. So, Kathleen, why don't you start by sharing, just the title of the book is powerful. Because it just puts it real. It just calls it what it is. And thank heavens, we need a lot more leaders just calling it what it is, in a very loving and positive way. I'll just add that last part. But Crappy to Happy, how did you decide that would be the name of the book, or was it your co-author along with you, Ariel Patricia?
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting, Temple. Ariel and I were sitting around talking on the phone. We were having a phone call. And she said, you know, we want to do three books in the sacred stories, the sacred stories of transformation. So I'd like to do a second book that kind of focuses on joy, but it's going to be a really snappy, you know, title. And our first one was Chaos to Clarity. Okay, everybody got it right away. Okay, Chaos to Clarity. And I said, oh, that's going to be something short, because all the titles we were coming up with were too long. I said, let's be something snappy and short, something like, you know, Crappy to Happy. And she goes, well, that's it. That's the title for the next book. I said, no, I was joking. I meant, you know, it has to be snappy like that. She goes, no, that's the title for the next book. So Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy, it became, and it is two stories of grit, grace, and love. And we tried to make sure that the stories ended or had in them a dose of joy.
It's really powerful because everybody, from what I understand, and I've been on some shows with some of the other authors, including myself, I'm very grateful to be one of them. But it seemed like you picked individuals that were really about being raw, being authentic, and being real. And so, James, I would like to tune into you right now and look at that, because you've been on the forefront for a long time. You were willing to step out there early on and just call things the way they were, which were extremely transformative. What do you feel about the power of storytelling and how this book is making such an impact, because people are willing to just say, here's the way it was, here's the way it is, and here's the way it can be?
Well, you know, I thank you for having me. You know, I really was impressed by the book. I in fact, call it enlightened, meaning that there's an energy to this book because all the contributors had a take on how to recover your joy. I called it the art of the comeback. And if there's ever been a time in the world where this is appropriate to talk about, even, you know, desperately, you know, the book hits that mark. And again, we all get set back in life. This is probably going to go down in history, what's happened to us, the big setback. You know, over 26 million people have lost everything. And that means generations of people who, you know, cashed out to initiate their dream business. People who were planning on getting educated, planning on following a path of employment that has disappeared. You know, it's. There's a lot of depression out there, but also anger because, you know, as we heard just recently, then, you know, the WHO and the CDC now say they believe it was all a mistake. The shutdown accomplished nothing. And while the media didn't want to talk about it that way because of politics, that's what the scientists were saying. So in any event, you know, anger and depression don't get us anywhere. So we have to work with where we are, in my view. And when I saw this book, it was the contributors were so right on in the varying ways that, you know, they had made the comeback. And, you know, again, I believe the understanding of how to stay in the flow is I've written about it, you know, in a synchronistic flow, come back to it, find a silver lining at every setback. And trust that the, you know, the divine design in this world will, once you tune in, will pay off. I mean, all we have to do is recover and find our joy. And you know, my opinion is always, well, the way to do that is go help somebody else. You know, find somebody else that's depressed around you and go and practice the interpersonal ethic, which of course is sending joy with intention to people. And what happens is that it, you know, we fill up first with that joy, and the joy is metaphysical. It's a peace that surpasses all understanding. There's no logic that would ever convince us to be joyful. This is a gift, and you know, when we share it, you know, and we try to help other people recover it, guess what? We recover it as well. So if this is a great lesson of this reset, I believe it's a silver lining we can use. And again, this book sort of, to me, in a very down-to-earth way, and it is telling that truth to the world.
That's very powerful. How does that make you feel, Kathleen? Does that resonate? Doesn't that feel like just what you had that you had known all along, or had hoped for, or envisioned with the power of this book? I'm so thrilled that this book is doing so well. That it, you know, because it is touching people, it's touching the hearts and lives. And like James was saying, about 3 weeks ago, I took a silent retreat, and it was like this book kind of fell in my lap about an evangelist. The first well-known evangelist in America was a woman. And she at one time was one of the most noted people in the world. And she had thousands of people flocking to her community. And she built the Angelus Temple in California, which exists today. And they have churches all over the world. Her doctrine, I didn't really identify with. But what was cool was it was cyclical in that she was out teaching during the time of the influenza and the Great Depression. And like James is saying, we don't know right now what kind of depression we're going to have economically. It's still, I mean, the domino effect is happening, but we have another kind of great depression called mental health depression, 10-year-olds, you know, killing themselves. If this is ever a time for people to speak out and talk about what they feel like their soul mission is, it would be now. Now would be the time. If you were waiting for a moment, you know, you've been holding back, now would be a time to let it go, right, guys?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think James hit it right on the head when he talked about the interpersonal ethic and spreading that with joy. And also, you know, reaching out to help someone else to take the focus off of yourself and in a way get out of your head, because when we're locked down in the house, we spend a lot of time in our head, and that's not always a good place to be. One of the things that really, there were two things that the stories in this book impressed me with, and those were the stories that Ariel, Patricia, and I chose. They were stories that showed how people, they didn't give up. But what they did do was they let go and they let God. There's a lot of spirituality in the book. And when you do that, when you let go and you let God, you walk on the path that I believe you and God decided you were going to walk on before you were born. And a lot of that is about helping someone else. So that was the first thing that I looked for in the book. And then the second thing was faith. Every story showed how important faith was to the author in getting them through their crappy to a place of happy. And that's what I pretty much focused on with the stories in the book, the ones that we chose, because we didn't choose all of the stories that came in for this book. That's pretty much what we focused on, was not just how deep and dark they went with the crappy, but how high they rose up using their faith for the happy.
I don't know how many people I've met in my life that once they could be a little further along with the woundology of their lives, if they could go back and revisit it again from more of a healthy mindset or a sense of an open heart, they could see that everything had been for them all along. And that's a huge breakthrough, isn't it? That's why in the word breakthrough, there's the ache and the ooh. You know, we've had a little bit about that, haven't we, Sister Kat, in our lifetime? We've had a little bit of an ache and an ooh, but it develops you and really plays a part in bringing out your best self, if you let it.
It does. It does. And another thing that I talk about in this book, and one of the things that makes it a little different from many other compilation books that are out in the marketplace, is Patricia, at the end of each section, I would sum up that section from coming from the psychology professor, because my degree is in psychopathology and I taught psychology at USF, whereas Ariel Patricia would come from the spiritual aspect of being a reverend. So we have these two different points of view in the book, and in the foreword that James Redfield wrote, of course, he hit on all of those. But then also in the afterword of the book, Ariel Patricia and I focused on the spirituality of joy and the psychology of joy. And one of the things that I wrote about was the power of laughter to scare away the boogeyman of crisis, and how I had this wonderful friend, Petronelle, who was an author, and she would always tell me about her dire health while she was laughing. Whatever the doctors would tell her was wrong with her, she would just laugh about it and laugh about it. And I remember the first time when she told me that the doctors had just told her that she was going to go blind. And she was laughing as she was telling me, and she wiggled her fingers and she said, you know, I'm learning Braille now while I can see, so it'll be a little bit easier. And laughed and laughed. At first, I thought she'd lost her mind. But then I suddenly realized I was laughing with her, even though I was frightened for her. And that's when I realized the power of laughter. And laughing in the face of crisis is often the first step of laughing your way out of it. And moving into that joy. And rather than staying down there in the dumps, you move up the ladder into a place of happiness and joy, and you use laughter as the rungs to get you up there.
How do you feel about that, James? Let's hear from you for a moment. How has power impacted your life, and how has it impacted the people that you've been working with in your years of teaching and coaching, et cetera?
Well, you know, it's laughter is the best medicine, right? You know, also laughter, humor has always been called the greatest sign of sanity. So it's centering. You know, laughter comes from joy. You know, we're talking about the same complex, the same really level of consciousness, because when we get up where we're we're connected to this divine energy, and listen, this is something anybody can prove to themselves at this moment. You know, I like to talk about how the connection is easier now than ever before in history. This connection to a higher energy and consciousness. There are more people meditating and praying and acknowledging a divine source to our lives, and a divine connection that animates life. And with all this pursuit of questioning, it's easier to do than ever before. Of course, the people who live in this material world of just use your ego to force your way through and control as many people as you can, and control whatever source of money you have coming in, and do it. Sorry about that.
Are you the dog that wants to talk? I mean, these are very.
My
he has something
to
very significant to say.
What I say. But the thing about it is this is a metaphysical event. Always recovery and joy, and you find a connection with intention, and you search for it, and you move toward a kind of discovery attitude. You follow the mysterious coincidences, and you find your peace. And again, this book is full of those stories, and it's something that I think we can talk about with clarity now. We can assume it's possible. We can tell young people at earlier and earlier age that they can make a divine connection. It's theirs, though. They have to make it. They have to define it. But it's a happening going on in spite of everything else. And that's the reset, and that's the silver lining as I see it.
That's so powerful. Kat, I believe I told you this. One of my favorite stories is about John Lennon that his mother taught him as a little boy. Have you heard this, you and James, this story? That his mother taught him that, you know, the secret to life was happiness. And so when he got in school, the teacher gave an assignment for all the kids to tell her, you know, what was the secret of life. And John Lennon said, you know, happiness. And so she wrote on the paper, you didn't understand the assignment. And he wrote back to her, and you don't understand life.
Our children can teach us so much because they have not yet learned what they can't do. That's what I tell people all the time. Connect with your inner child because your inner child knows no limits. And, you know, that's another reason why I'm such a great dreamer. I trust in dreams. I believe in dreams. I believe they're sacred doorways to the divine, because I never believed anyone who said dreaming is just for children. You need to stay focused. I believed dreaming was for all of us because it was the doorway back to heaven.
Mm-hmm. It's our deepest connection, isn't it? It's our deepest connection. Yeah. Well, you know, Ernest Holmes in the Science of Mind textbook said, you know, there will come a day when science and religion, meaning spirituality, of course, will walk hand in hand. But also, you know, calling these ideas metaphysically really spiritual psychology, because that really is what it's about. And I like what you said earlier about, you know, that people identified that along the way that they had found a higher being, or they had found God. And, you know, James likened to that as well. And I know for me in the story that I tell, I found a God that worked for me. And I think sometimes that's a defining moment or a redefining moment, right, with people, is because maybe the God you were taught about when you were, you know, little isn't the God that you wind up with as you evolve and as you grow and as you deepen. And I definitely had to get a different concept, because the concept that I was taught, and based upon my life choices, we weren't going in the same direction. You know, that's for sure. And I think it's beautiful also when people can shed the gender of God too, because as long as people project that God's a person, they're also going to project personal letdowns and personal abandonments and personal rejections, you know, because that's part of what goes on with that belief system. So I'm thrilled with the people that have brought in some new stories and some new light. And as James said, a place of enlightenment that people can hear it in a different way, or hear it through the lives and hearts of other people. It's just really powerful. You did good, girl.
Thank you. And, you know, Dr. Ann Work, her story in the book was similar to yours, in that the God that she had been taught by her family was not the God that she could identify with. In fact, that God scared the bejabbers out of her. And it wasn't until she was much, much older that she came to know God in her own way and found out exactly what she had missed all her life. And now she's so devout, it's unbelievable. But, you know, there isn't just one way to embrace God. There are many ways. There are many paths to find your way to him. And I've often had people say to me, well, you know what? I don't believe in God. I just don't, because God would never let this happen to me. And I always tell them, God respects your choices. And the best way to connect with him, to remember that, is through dreams, prayers, and meditation. But remember, God never turns his back on you. He always believes in you, even when you don't believe in him.
Well, and I remind people, you know, did you get up this morning and have to tell yourself to breathe? What do you mean? Well, did you get up this morning and have to tell yourself to breathe? No. Okay. Did you get up this morning and tell your heart to beat? Oh, I'm getting up. Heart, let's go. No. Well, then there must be something greater than you that's got your back. I mean, really, let's go now. Hey, James, where are you? Checking in with you there.
Loving all this conversation. Listen, you know, there's only one measure for finding the divine in your life, in my view, and that is love. You know, I argue all the time with people that talk about self-empowerment and all that goes along with that, you know, because if you're talking about meditation and it's not involving opening the heart to a kind of love that as a state, not a love that needs an object, but a love that's a state, that's the measure of our connection with the divine. And after that, it's the great mystery, right? All we then know that is that we get guiding intuitions that put us in a place where mysterious coincidences that feel like fate operating come into our lives. And that's the flow. And as humanity matures in spiritual connection, I believe that will ultimately surpass, this sort of ego fight that is the current situation in the world. But is at its last gaps. I think all the sense of controlling we feel about from authorities, global and otherwise, you know, this is their last gasp at keeping the old ego-driven need for power and money and the security that comes from that. You know, it's both political parties are infected, so it's a last gasp, because I believe that the greater life is the open heart flow to destiny, to journey, and to mission, and all that goes with that.
Love that.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
And thank you so much for tuning in. I love that you support us on Unity Online Radio. I love unity. I really, as I stated in the book that we're talking about today, Crappy to Happy, I really know I would not be alive if it weren't for the teachings of unity and the support that I received to find a different God that actually would work for me. So hallelujah on that one. But I'm talking today with Kathleen O'Keefe Canavis, who is one of the co-authors of this amazing book and great concept, Crappy to Happy, along with her co-author, Reverend Ariel. Patricia, you can get the book on Amazon, Crappy to Happy. It has remained a bestseller, yippee-yay. It's 30 authors. And the foreword was written by the one and only someone that we honor so much, because he was able to describe in modern language what a lot of the natives have been teaching since the beginning of time about energy and connection. And that's James Redfield. And you can visit James by going to his website, which is CelestinVision.com. Or you can visit Kathleen O'Keefe Canavis, and you can visit her at her website, samename.com, and we'll put those into our love notes later. But James, let's start again with you, because, continue to put things in context with us, with where we are in the world and what you envision, and then we'll have Kathleen share some stories from the book itself.
Well, you know, it all operates at ground zero, right? Where we are, many of us hitting really brick walls with projects because of the shutdowns, and it all operates right there at ground zero for our individual lives. But the setback is a reset, in my view, and I hear that more and more from many, many sources. I think it's catching on because that's what has happened to us. We've been thrown back on our own securities, our inner securities. How are we doing in that regard? Were we dependent on other people to uplift us all the time? Did we have these activities that were really preoccupations that were meant to, just kind of keep that small, quiet voice inside us, that, that conscience quiet, mm-hmm. so that we can just pursue our joys? And it all has stopped. So here we are, we're at that ground zero in our lives. Many, many people have already found the silver lining. They've reconnected from a spiritual point of view. And the essence of life is, it's finding that dream, the soul's dream, that gives us inspired joy that, as this book we've been talking about emphasizes over and over again, what our role is, how can we help? That's the source of energy and connection, because if we tune in to our inner guidance, what happens is that we have information to give. I believe that what's happening is that how the world really works metaphysically is becoming well known now. I believe actually it's our clarity about it is, as everybody could hear from the comments yet on this show, we're getting clarity about what's involved in making a connection. It takes intention. It takes looking for the joy within, the opening of the heart, connecting in a way that and meditating and using contemplation time to quiet the emotions and to come to this place where we get an inner knowing about what we're supposed to be doing here. So the lives that get the most miracles are the ones that are connecting and realizing that the world is designed to open up for us, for our dream, our soul's dream, to help, mm-hmm. to contribute something, and that's the method. And wherever we are, whatever's happening, we can tune into that method. And what's the key for me is to try to help as much as we want help. And if you look at just synchronicities that we expect to come to us, if we just look at, the people we meet, if we ask only what synchronicity do they have for us, how can they help us? I think the first thing we should say, and as we tune into our intuitive intelligence, is what kind of synchronicity can I provide for this person? And we all know that it's happened. If we hear, we just get a hunch. If I tell them about my story of how I recovered from something or I solved a problem in this conversation, maybe it's a stranger. Maybe you don't know whether to share so deeply. But if you just do it, if you just, whatever you thought of to say about your life, if you just do that, what do we hear? What do we all hear? We hear, oh my goodness, I needed to hear that. That's the very thing I need to hear in my life. That's a synchronicity for me. So the world is designed for us to tune in and help and make these grand synchronicities. If we were all doing it, if I could wave a wand and all of a sudden everybody would be doing that, trying to be a synchronicity for the people they interact with in life, the world would change completely. I mean, it would be such a confirmation of the spiritual design of the world that it would be a huge breakthrough. Well, I think that breakthrough is happening. I think that's the reason for optimism, and we're going to break, what we're going to do is is have so much love emerging that it'll be hard to stay in ego, because the attraction to this kind of culture that we're building will be so large. You know, it's just, what do those people have? Yeah, I want some of that juice. And so I think it's just important here at Ground Zero for all of us to understand that we're participating in a great awakening, and it's continuing to happen regardless of the setbacks we face. And, you know, as the book says, this is, you know, joy wins. Pursue your joy.
That's so powerful. Calling out of ourselves, that's what is ours to do. And there's just so much that we are being called to go deeper. And those that aren't resisting it, I think is kind of a given, are certainly finding it to not be so complicated if you're willing not to go deeper inside yourself and not want to hurry this past us, want to get through it. And speaking of humor, what you were saying earlier, you know, Kathleen, is I was out in the cafe mm-hmm. earlier, and I said, we're getting to the place where we miss hugging so much. Some of us are going to get caught in a retail store hugging a mannequin pretty soon. I mean, right? I mean, it's like, please, Louise. Oh, I miss hugging people, mm-hmm. you know, so much. All of us lovers of the universe, we love hugging animals and people mm-hmm. and the touch part. So that's definitely, it has been a missing. Kathleen, I know that obviously mm-hmm. every story that you have in the book, Crappy to Happy, it must mm-hmm. have been quite a process to pick the ones that mm-hmm. you and Ariel, you know, went through in this process. But are there one or two that are relevant, that stick out in your mind right now, that you'd like to share with us?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, there are a couple that I think really speak to what we're all going through right now with the lockdowns and COVID and losing our loved ones. And one of them is called The Cycle of Life, and it was written by Dr. Bernie Siegel. Everybody knows Dr. Bernie Siegel. And he mm-hmm. wrote that story about losing his beloved wife, Bobby. And this happened just before COVID hit. It was like maybe a month or two before it hit. But what I found so profound about his story is he didn't hide his grief. He takes the reader on how deep that grief he felt was, because he and his wife, Bobby, had been together forever. They were two lovebirds. And so when one of those lovebirds died, it hit Bernie very hard. He ended up in the hospital himself. But what he realized were the synchronicities that were coming into him even when he was in the hospital. He and his wife's number is 9. And his wristband, when he added all the numbers up on his wristband when he was being admitted into the hospital, they all equaled 9. And they put him in room 9. And all these 9s kept popping up all over the place. And suddenly he realized his wife was sending him signs from the other side. And it wasn't until he really got back home and had to climb in that big king-size bed by himself that it really hit him just how lonely he was. And he turned out the light, kind of, you know, snuggled down in bed, and then he felt it. It was his wife blowing a kiss on his face. And he suddenly realized she's not gone. She's just not seen at this point, but she's still there with him. And that really, it gave me a feeling of, yes, that is so true, because I felt it with my parents, and it wasn't my imagination. You know, when we lose the people we love, they're not really gone. It's not like we find them again. It's that they are in another dimension but can get permission to come back and help us during our most difficult times. And so even on my shows that I do, I get emails from people all the time that say, yes, My loved ones are coming back in my dreams. My loved ones are there with me during my deepest, most difficult hour. So I found that with Bernie Siegel's story, it reaffirmed something else that you stated, and that's that spirit, that science is catching up with spirituality. Yes, scientifically, they're dead, but spiritually, we know the spirit never dies and that love never dies, and it's always there with us. All we have to do is ask, and we will receive. So I really loved his story. And then another story that I found just incredible was in part two, Health and Well-Being, I'll Stand By You, and it was by Nurse Diane Vick. And Nurse Diane Vick was a COVID nurse, and her job was to call families to tell them whether or not their child tested positive for COVID. That was her job. And she said in order to do her job and do it well, she had to dance in front of the mirror until she found her joy, till she was so pumped up with joy that when she called the families, she was able to deliver that dire negative report with a voice of joy and reassure them that their child was going to be okay, and then give them all the information they needed to go through the next step, whatever that step was. So she would dance until she found her place of joy, and only then would she make that phone call.
Wow. That's powerful. Just the medicine of storytelling. It's just it never ages. It's always so welcoming. It's just like, wow. It just puts energy in your soul. James, you want to tune in on this?
Well, you know, it's a lesson in giving. You know, that story of the. I know Bernie so well, and he's an angel on the earth, you know, and he's got something positive to contribute always. He speaks his mind. He searches, you know, for the intuitive thing to say. And he's, you know, he's just still a brilliant very brilliant in his participation because it's so timely. But there, you know, there are a lot of models out there for us. And it's, you know, if we tune in, we get the messages about who it is out there we can help, who we need to call. I know I think community again is what we're searching for. We have to do it online. We're trying to create a community that's relevant to learning and to reinforcing each other and giving synchronicities to each other. But it's something that, you know, it's a gift we receive, what to say to other people. And that's what opens up that energy and antidepressive, you know, it's regaining the joy. And, you know, if we only do that, if we only just look, think about all the people we know and how we might cheer them up, lift them up. That's the way up ourselves. And, you know, it's happening. It's happening. There's so many reconnections happening with people, with other people in their lives. So it's, you know, it's positive, and it's even in its struggle. And I think we come out again with a greater sense of spiritual connection and all that goes with that, especially joy.
It really retrieves one's soul in one way. You know, it's the redefining. I was working with a mentee not long ago who's in ministerial training, and so she was giving me the list of, and now I'm working on this, and you know, this was broken, and now I'm working on this. And I said to her, I said, can I give you a story that someone gave me a long time ago? And it transformed my life. that I'm not looking at what's wrong with me. I'm looking at what's right about me. And it was just interesting, just those words, you know, like you're saying, James, or what you're saying, Kat, is that you just go with the moment of what you're guided to do. And I said, this is what happened to me. You know, I went to a healer and I thought, wow, I'm in great shape. You know, I got a good attitude and they're just going to go, wow, you're just doing okay. And they looked at me and said, oh, you need some kind of psychic surgery. I said, what? Excuse me? You know, I didn't know something was wrong with me. And the minister friend behind me said, oh, no, that's what's right about you. You know, you're just getting into that. And when I shared that with that young woman, I mean, she just, it's like her heart just opened up, you know, because, you know, part of the world that we live in is for people to keep reminding each other, or systems keep reminding each other, that you're broken. And that's what's so beautiful about the metaphysical world. And that's what's so beautiful about this book, is to share with people, no, you're not broken. You're original. You're definitely unique, but you're broken. You're definitely not broken. So powerful, powerful stuff. It really is. Mm-hmm. So, Kat, is your story in the book about your dreams?
It is. And, you know, it's a bit about what you touched on earlier, is science catching up with spirituality. And, you know, I believe that dreams are important information. And the story that I used in the book is a story about a girlfriend of mine who had come down with a very rare leukemia. And much like is talked about with the COVID patients who were locked away and died by themselves, she was going to go through bone marrow transplant, and they quarantined her. And unfortunately, she didn't make it. She did die. And I didn't get to see her to say goodbye to her. And it really broke my heart. So my heart goes out to people who have lost family members to COVID and weren't able to say goodbye. And I find, Temple, that every time I get really angry with God, stuff like that happens. Because we're human. We do that. We get angry, and it's okay. God understands. He made us, and he doesn't make mistakes, so he knows we're going to do that. So, you know, I was angry that I didn't get to say goodbye, and I wanted to see that she was okay, because I knew that how much she had suffered through all the treatment, the chemo, the radiation, the whole nine yards. And so one night before I went to sleep, I set my intention. I said, God, I need to see her. I know she's in a better place, blah, 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 but I need to see her. You understand where I'm coming from, right? So I set that intention, and God's used to me, you know, in my demands. He gets a kick out of them, actually. And that night I had a dream. And in the dream, I realized I was dreaming that I was in a big city, cobblestone streets. The sun was out. It was a beautiful day. And I went, oh, I'm in Boston. And my girlfriend walked up to me. She was my tennis partner, and we traveled all over the place together. And she said, come on, why don't we go get a martini? We were known as the martini queen. We always had martinis after we played tennis and stuff. So I walked into a restaurant down there called Legal Seafood. Anybody from Boston knows Legal Seafood. And we sat in their beautiful bar, and the waitress brought us martinis. And my martini had extra olives in it, because my husband's pretty much a teetotaler, but he will eat my olives. And her martini came with no fluid in it, nothing, just a bunch of vegetables. And I looked at her and I said, why don't you have anything in your martini glass except vegetables? And she said, well, you know, I gave up drinking when I was going through treatment, but I really wanted to see you too. So while I drank my martini, she ate her veggies. And the next, sometime during the week, when I ran into her husband, I told him the dream, and he said, you know, she completely gave up alcohol while she was going through treatment. So, yeah, she would be sitting in that bar with a martini glass full of nothing but veggies. And that brings me back to something that you said earlier, Temple, and that was how science is catching up to spirituality. You know, the other book that I did with Dr. Larry Burke, who is Duke University Medical Radiologist, Chief of Radiology, we did a book on dreams that can save your life. And one of the criteria for being in that book was that whoever submitted their story, we had to check to make sure that they had had the dream that diagnosed their illness before they went to the doctor. And then the medical tests that they had after they had had the dream were confirmed by pathology reports or surgery or whatever it was, which shows us that dreams are doorways to divine information when we're sick or when we need to change course. And science is just catching up to that. I tell people all the time, you know, science just goes so far, and then comes God.
I like that. Yeah, that's powerful and so true. And I would say in honor of what you're saying, and those of you that are listening, either now or later, that to own your dreams and to my wife writes down her dreams every day, own them, and participate in them, and ask them to come forth. And because, you know, the simplicity is what we focus on, you know, produces in our lives. So James, you want to give us a parting sentence or two or a thought as well?
I love all this talk. You know, dreams are a favorite of mine. You know, Carl Jung, who coined the term synchronicity and started the human potential movement, and that's mapped out spirituality so well right now. He loved dreams, and you know, his way of interpreting dreams was to take the dream, and you know, sometimes they're odd plots, you know, just meeting different people, and yeah, you know, there are all these, you know, you may have a dream about a person who's following you. You know, his way of interpreting a dream is to say, well, how does the plot of the dream apply to your house? I mean, excuse me, to your real life. Mm-hmm. Who in your life is following you would be his remark about my example. Or who it is, who's resisting you, or who are you resisting, or, you know, in your life, in your real life. And, you know, I really believe that the afterlife scholarship, you know, the investigations into near-death experiences and what that culture, the afterlife is a real culture. We come from there, we go back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're sleeping, there's a lot going on according to that literature, those findings, you know, that's, you know, we're getting tutored and we're getting support and when you come back and you wake up with a dream, it's, you know, part of that is the leftover seminar conclusion or the teaching and pointing to a real life situation that you're yet to become aware of. So, you know, it's the mystery of dreams has always fascinated me, and because it's just a matter of trying to realize the message for us from a dream that applies to our real life and the plots of our real life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so powerful. It's been a pleasure. It's been such a pleasure to be with both of you. Both James Redfield, thank you. Thank you so much. And Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, just really grateful. And I urge everybody to go to Amazon and pick up that book, Crappy to Happy. You'll be very glad that you did, and share it with others. And please join me at templehaze.com or First Unity Spiritual Campus. Love your comments. Love to hear what you think and who you'd like to have on the show.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
We spend a third of our lives sleeping and dreaming, yet most of us have no idea what goes on during that time. I'm Kelly Sullivan Walden, and as a dream expert and best-selling author, I'm here to empower you to mine the gold from your nighttime dreams. Join me on the Kelly Sullivan Walden Show, part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network, available wherever you get your podcasts. Until we meet again, don't take your dreams lying down.